Calls for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's Call for Action's president and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Moving can be traumatic and expensive. How can you protect yourself from fraud, overpricing, non-delivery of items, damage to your possessions, and a host of other concerns? Well, we have some answers for you. My guest is Rory Crawford. He's a moving consultant with JK Moving and Storage. Rory, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Now, we hear from a lot of consumers about problems they've had with moving. And I had done a report and I got an email from you saying, "Shirley, not all movers are crooks." And I said, "Well, you know, you're absolutely right." So what we really need to do is to talk about how we find the good guy movers or good gal movers when we're looking, and what do we do to protect ourselves? Because I will tell you, since people don't move very often, they're not really equipped to deal with many of the things that are tossed at them when they're moving. I mean, I haven't moved in I don't know how many years, so it would be a kind of scary experience. So let's start first off with the people out there who are anticipating a move. How do they go about finding a mover aside from just asking their friends?
Well, movers very often are going to contact them. Once your house goes on the market, you'll be flooded with flyers in the mail from various movers. I think probably the best way to find a mover, though, is to talk to somebody that you know who has moved and can give you a recommendation. Some part of the decision, when you finally meet with movers, is going to be somewhat subjective. The moving consultant, the person that comes out to meet with you, represents his or her company.
And, of course.
And I think that you can make some part of the decision on their professionalism, the way they're dressed, how they conduct themselves during the initial interview.
But there's something beyond that. You get them there. How many people would you suggest that you have out? How many movers?
I think it's a good idea to get three estimates.
Three estimates. Okay. All right. So we've got these three people. We're going to judge them based on a lot of different things, how they impress us and so on and so forth. Then after you've gotten through that initial part of it, where do you go? In other words, you've found three moving companies that seem to be what you would consider legitimate and somebody you want to deal with. Then what do you do next?
Well, I think one of the things is you have to ask a lot of questions.
Okay.
Is
it a good idea to have a list of questions beforehand?
It is absolutely a good idea. And I think it's a good idea to research the movers that are coming out to see you before they come out to see you. Check your movers out before they come out. Very often, moving companies will have their own websites, and that's usually a very good source of information.
Well, hopefully they'll have consumer tips on there for you also.
And there are also outside organizations that have lots of consumer tips. One in particular is the American Moving and Storage Association.
And that is a nonprofit group?
It's a nonprofit group, and they have a program called Pro Mover where they rate thousands of movers all across the United States.
Oh, that's excellent. Okay.
They have an excellent website with lots of tips, and I would heartily recommend anybody that moving would check that.
So that's American Moving and Storage Association. Okay.
That's correct.
And so they rate companies. You also, I think, there's a federal agency that you can go and get complaints about movers, right?
The Department of Transportation is the government agency that oversees the moving industry at this point.
Okay.
The Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, they also have an excellent website, www.protectyourmove.com.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think I've recommended that to consumers before. .com or .gov? I have that reference here.
I think you're right. I think it is .gov.
I think maybe it is. Yeah, protectyourmove.gov. It is. Because it's a government agency, so that's why I knew it. And I have given it to consumers before. Okay, so we need to go check it out. We've looked at three companies, and maybe we've narrowed it down to two of them or even one of them. We go to the website. Actually, it'd probably be a good idea to go to these websites and check out these people before you even decide which one of those three movers you're going to use, right? To see if there are complaints.
Not necessarily before they come out, but certainly before you make a decision.
Okay. Now, I know that all companies are going to get complaints, but I guess the big thing is, how does the company handle the complaints, and do they resolve it to the consumer's satisfaction? Would that be...
In this industry, it's not always a question of whether something's going to go wrong or not. It's a complicated business.
Right.
So very often, it's a question of what is the moving company going to do about it when it does go wrong?
And I think...
And how effective are they going to be at preventing it from going wrong in the first place?
And I think the other thing is, too, is that with so many items, and your personal items, and they mean a lot to us, we're going to be very protective, and any little incident is probably going to be a little bit emotional. So, and moving is emotional itself. It can be very traumatic.
It's number three on the list of stressful things that people do.
Is that right?
Behind death of a spouse and divorce.
Wow, I can understand that, because it is. I mean, you're changing your whole household and your life and everything else. So anyway, so we found ourselves a mover, all right? Now, let me go back just a moment. So those three people, we're going to ask them for estimates. What kind of estimates do we want to get, Rory?
Well, there's basically two kinds of estimates that you can get from a mover, a non-binding estimate and a binding estimate. And there are two kinds of binding estimates. In binding estimates, you can have a fixed price, or you can have a not-to-exceed estimate. With a fixed price, the price is the price. It's not going to be
That's
more.
That's what you're going to be charged.
It's not going to be less. With a not-to-exceed, you still have a cap, and a lot of people like to have the protection of that cap, but they also are happy that if the shipment should weigh less or take less time, that the final charges can be less than the estimate.
I see.
But
so
you still have the cap.
Those two binding estimates... Then the one is, you know what you're going to pay. And number two, if it turns out that the weight of your move, your items, is less than what was estimated.
That's correct.
Then you will pay less than, okay.
That's right.
And so actually the truck is put on a scale, isn't it?
On interstate shipments, it is going to be weighed. They drive the truck onto a scale first, then they load everything onto the truck, then they weigh it again.
Okay.
And the difference between the
two. What about intrastate?
An intrastate move... It depends on the state that it takes place in.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, in the Commonwealth of Virginia, they publish their own tariff. The Commonwealth of Virginia has a tariff, and it's a weight-based tariff, weight mm-hmm. and mileage.
Mm-hmm.
So when you move more than 30 miles within the state of Virginia, it's an intrastate move, and you have to use their rates. So in that case, it is based
mm-hmm.
on weight.
Mm-hmm.
In the state of Maryland, for instance, there are no intrastate rates. So a move from, Ocean City, Maryland to Cumberland, which could be several hundred miles, there's no regulation there, and movers can price it any way they like.
So you really have to be careful. But now, again, here with the intrastate, you can get a binding estimate. The rules about estimates still apply, or do they?
In the Virginia state tariff, there is no binding feature in the estimates. It's a non-binding estimate.
So what about Maryland?
In Maryland, it's really up to the mover. Some movers will give binding estimates and some movers will not.
Ah, so it's the wording of the contract that you're going to get. So it's a consumer has got to be very careful if they're moving within state. And I would assume that's true within the District of Columbia as well. We're going to come back to this.
Okay.
Let's just take a brief pause here to let our listeners know that they're tuned in to Federal News Radio, listening to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Rory Crawford. He's a moving consultant with JK Moving and Storage, and we're here to help you make that transition, that traumatic, as you say, the third most stressful event in our lives is to move. Okay, so we were talking about whether or not you're going to get a binding estimate. So we really have to look at moving in two different ways. One, if we're moving outside the state, and one, if we're moving within the state. And within the state presents a different set of issues because the regulations are different and the binding estimates may or may not be binding. So you need to get specifics in the contract, would you say?
That's true. And within the state, there's also another option, which would be considered a local move. So really, you have interstate moves, you have intrastate moves, and you have local moves.
Now, what is local moves? That's a certain mileage?
The local move is generally going to be less than 30 miles.
But can you in any of these situations ask for a binding estimate so that the company has to live by that?
Yes. There are some companies that just don't offer binding estimates. At my company, we will offer either.
Okay.
And I generally will discuss that with the customer and offer the option that seems to be best for them. There are some situations where a binding estimate is just not practical.
And for example?
for example, if all their goods are coming out of a mini storage.
Ah, so you don't even know how much the goods
weigh.
Yeah,
you'll throw open the door of the mini storage and all you see is what's in the front row. Sure. There could be 50 boxes of books back in there that you don't know about. So in that case, a non-binding estimate is really the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
A mover would be foolish to give a guaranteed price not knowing what's in there.
Right. So then there's where your sense of whether or not this mover is being straight with you as to whether or not you want to use them. So there's some – that's very interesting. I didn't realize that there were actually three areas of moving. I mean, it makes sense, but rules and regulations for all three are different.
Right. And really the only rules and regulations, to a lesser extent, to intrastate moves where it's controlled by a state like in Virginia – but interstate moves are the ones that have all the rules and regulations.
That's the federal regulations.
Because it's interstate commerce, and there are organizations that oversee that. But there are no regulations or organizations that oversee local moving.
For the local moving. Okay, so you're on your own. Listen to us. Be careful. Get estimates and do all those good things. Okay. All right, so we've done all this. We've done our homework. We've gotten our estimates, whichever we decide to use. Mm-hmm. And then... Well, what about the non-binding estimates? Does that leave you open, or is it true that non-binding estimates, there's a cap on – well, let's talk about federal regulations, because I think many of our mover listeners are going to be moving. They're moving outside the state. If you're moving and it is outside the state – and you get a non-binding estimate, is there a cap on how much the actual cost can exceed that non-binding estimate?
The straight answer is no, there's not. And I'm glad you brought that up, because this is a misunderstood
rule. Because I thought there was 110%.
Exactly, yeah. And don't feel bad if you don't understand it, because there's a whole lot of people in the moving industry that don't understand it either.
Okay.
Basically, the way the 110% rule is, and there is a 110% rule, but what it says is... It doesn't say that that's the most you have to pay for your move, period.
Mm-hmm.
What it does say is 110% of the estimate is the most you have to pay at the time of delivery. At the time of delivery is the key.
At the time of delivery.
You will still be responsible for all the charges associated with your move, but you'll be billed at 30 days for the balance.
Now, but doesn't that kind of leave you open for an unscrupulous mover to really jack up the price?
It does, although that's the nature of the beast with a non-binding estimate. You know that it can be more than – the final charges can be more than the estimate, or they can actually be less. And that's one of the reasons why you want to research your movers before you make a decision so you don't get hooked up with one of those unscrupulous movers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
It's another reason why you should get two or three estimates. If everybody's giving you an estimate, say, in the 8,000-pound range and one comes in at 4,000 pounds, well, you might be well advised to stay away from that one.
Right. Because there's something wrong. They're just trying to lowball you and get your business, and then they'll jack you up.
It may just be that they didn't see the same things that everyone else saw.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes it's an inadvertent mistake. But
well, we've had that. We've had complaints about that. We've had some of the other complaints that we've had, Rory, are people who arrive at their destination and the mover comes and says, "Huh, well, I'm not giving you your furniture until you pay me another $1,000.
Well, that's illegal.
I know it is, but they do it anyway.
Technically, they're only allowed to ask the customer to pay. When they show up at the front door and the driver puts his hand out and says, "Pay me," technically, he's only supposed to be able to ask for 110% of the estimate.
Wouldn't it be nice if that were the case? But unfortunately, I just heard recently from a guy who had moved to Florida, and he got there, and they refused to give him his furniture. They said, "We're not going to give it to you until you pay us this." Well, now, of course, he called us, and we told him the things that he needed to do. But my gosh, it's a really scary situation.
Now, sometimes, you know, someone gets an estimate for 3,500 pounds, and the mover shows up and says, "Well, your shipment weighed 8,000 pounds. You owe us more money." And sometimes that's legitimately what happens. Sometimes it really does weigh 8,000 pounds at that point.
I believe that the consumer has the right to go to the scales to see the weighing.
On interstate, it's rarely done because you don't know exactly
where
driver's going to get
them,
his weight.
Right.
But certainly the customer has the option to witness the weighing. And the other little... device for protection that's in there is the driver. If the driver shows up and says, you know, it's a lot more weight than what the customer was anticipating, you can have the shipment back weighed. In other words, they do the same thing that they did when it was loaded, but they do it in reverse.
So that if you're concerned.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. You can call your moving consultant or you can talk, you know, and they will instruct the driver to get a weight before he delivers and then deliver the shipment and then get a weight after he delivers.
Mm-hmm.
It's the reverse of the process that they do to rate the shipment, but it's a good way to find out what the net weight of the shipment
is. To make certain that you're right, that you're being treated fairly.
And in that case, you probably would want to follow them to the scale and watch.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That makes sense. Okay. So we've got the person, they've found a mover, they've gotten three estimates, they've done all their research and homework, and they've checked the websites to see if there are complaints against these movers, and if so, how they've been handled. We've done all that, we've done all the background, and we've, you know, and then the big day arrives, and that is a scary, scary thing. So, but we need to talk about, I guess, a few days before the big day arrives, because there are a lot of things that are going to be going on. Before we do that, however, let's just pause and let our listeners know that they're tuned in to Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Rory Crawford. He's a moving consultant with JK Moving and Storage, and we're talking about how to make your next move a little less traumatic. Okay, so backing up before the day of move. Now, we moved our office recently, and I will tell you, we spent 2 months getting ready for that move. We cleaned out, got rid of stuff. We shredded. We donated some stuff to a charity. And even though we're a charity, we donated stuff that we did not want to use. And we'd gotten got our movers. And then before that, before the movers came, we started putting stuff in boxes and marking it as to which office it went into. We developed a floor plan of the office, which could be the same thing as true for your house. Now, in this case, this mover helped us develop the floor plan, mm-hmm. told us what we should do and what we needed to do, and, you know, put all the desks in there and all that stuff so that they knew exactly where everything was going. Now, does that same principle apply to moving a home?
The same principle applies for things you do before the move and the same things you do at the time of delivery,
mm-hmm.
although on a little bit of a smaller scale than a commercial office move.
Well, our office was not very big, so it wasn't smaller than my house, actually.
With a homeowner, especially for a local move, that person will generally be the only one on the truck. For an interstate move, they may share a truck with somebody, but when the delivery time comes, the same process is going to work. There may not be a floor plan of the house that's spelled out in advance.
But there should be, I think. I think the homeowner would be very smart if they have a copy, and they copy it and give it to each of the movers and mark every item that's going to be put in that home. That's what we did with our office. Mm-hmm. It worked beautifully.
Usually what happens is a customer stands at the front door and gives directions.
Doesn't
and
work
says,
very well because yeah. where in the room do you place it?
Well, they need. That's true. That's true.
We found that the moving company that we use were so good that they would go in and they would place it exactly where we asked them. I mean, I couldn't believe that we had such an easy experience. We had wonderful movers.
I have had customers that have actually gone behind the packers and written the room on the box that carton
well, we
is
write,
supposed
write
to be
the,
delivered
you write
to.
Write the room on the box, mm-hmm. but you also give them floor plan. And we actually, on the door of each office, we tacked up a copy of that floor plan as to where everything went. So there was no question.
Right. It's a little bit of a simpler operation with a household goods move. And very often the customer is following the crew to the room anyway and saying, put the dresser on that wall, put the mm-hmm. bed on that wall.
Mm-hmm.
And that's generally the way it goes.
But if you've
it's
got
a local
bunch
move,
of
you want
but if you've got a bunch of movers, Rory, you can't keep up with all of
that's
them.
That's true. And especially if you're paying by the hour.
That's
because
right.
for them to have to come back again and reposition things,
it's
the clock is still
thing.
Running at that
right.
point.
Right.
Now, on an interstate move, time has nothing to do with it.
Oh, it doesn't?
No,
okay.
You're just paying for the weight of your
shipment.
But it
does have just your organization. I think the organization, the pre-organization before a move is just so critical.
And it's going to relieve stress, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's true with an office or home, I believe. So, but at any rate, yeah, relieving the stress, exactly. Okay, suppose we've gotten through all this, got our household goods there. Do we have the movers unpack our, let's say, breakable items? How do we deal with that? Because when they leave, they want a statement from you that everything is there and not marked and damaged or whatnot. But how can you be sure?
There on interstate shipments and actually on storage work as well, there is going to be a descriptive inventory that's written at the time of loading. So every single piece of furniture that goes on the truck is recorded on this inventory. and a description of its wear and damage.
And damages.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, you'll want to compare at the time of delivery. But as you pointed out, very often things are in boxes. So,
right.
You know, you don't know that there's damage inside a box until you open it up. I always recommend to my customers just make very clear, you know, be very careful to check the condition of furniture as it comes in the door. And then don't waste, you know, it's a busy time. People
sure.
are moving into a new house. They're trying to get their kids registered for new schools. They're, you know, maybe they're going through settlements on
right.
homes. They have a lot on their plate. And then usually filing the claim is something that maybe they procrastinate with. I think it's very important to file that claim as soon as possible. Some moving companies will require you, mostly on local moves, will require you to file a written claim within 10 days.
Yeah, but what about the statement that you have to sign when they leave you, that everything is there and good and not damaged, et cetera, et cetera?
That doesn't
Isn't
count
that...
hidden damage, though.
It does not?
No.
In
fact, in interstate moves, sometimes you have up to 9 months to file a claim. It gives you plenty of time to unpack the cartons. And if there's damage, then don't waste any time.
Okay.
Get a claim form, fill it out, get it back into the moving company.
All right. Now, what about, let's say you have crystal. Should you have them pack it so that they're responsible for it? Should you pack it? And if you pack it, are they responsible for its condition when it arrives?
Most movers will not insure things that they have not packed.
Okay.
Or at least they will not insure things. They would not pay a claim if there was no damage to the box.
Okay.
So I think in many cases it does make sense to pay a little bit extra and have the movers pack your fragile things.
Okay. Now, what about insurance on those fragile things? Even if they pack them, there's a very low level. If this is an expensive piece of crystal, the 60 cents a pound or whatever it is that you get is not going to go very far towards replacing
well,
it.
Well, let's talk about insurance for a second. In the moving business,
we've
it's
only
called...
got a minute.
Okay. You have other options besides the 60 cents per pound per article. You can take full value replacement coverage on your goods. But even when you do that, it's a good idea to make note of any items. And the definition is actually anything worth more than $100 per pound per article is considered a high value item.
Okay.
And you should list that separately.
So you should list that and insure it separately or?
No, it's part of the overall coverage that you have on the shipment.
Okay.
But as long as you've listed it in advance, then they won't be able
so
to limit the amount of
it. So if I have my grandmother's crystal goblet and it's an antique and it's been estimated at worth $300, that should be listed. And should the value be listed at the same time?
Yes.
So?
Not necessarily the value, but you need to let them know that it meets the definition of a high value
item.
Is
it expensive to have your crystal and stuff packed?
No, a China barrel it depends on the company, is going to vary somewhere between $30 and $40 to have a box of China packed.
So that could be well worth it in the long run.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and plus you have to have the materials and everything else yourself. So you really need to consider.
The movers provide packers that are professionals. This is what they do day in and day out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the best way to ensure that your goods are going to get there in one piece.
Oh, yeah. Okay. We have a little time. Any final word? Check and recheck.
I would say for all types of moves, just make absolutely sure that you get three estimates from
right.
you know from reputable movers. I would stay away at all costs. I would stay away from internet movers and phone movers. I would stay away from people that are not willing to come out and do a visual survey
Amen.
Of your home.
Amen.
Mm-hmm. I would avoid moving during peak periods if you have that flexibility. There are
mm-hmm.
certain periods in the summer that just...
It's really crazy.
It's nuts,
mm-hmm.
right? Ask questions, and if your moving consultant is not willing to answer them,
find
should
somebody
raise
else.
A flag. Absolutely.
Rory, that's the last word. Thank you
Thank
ever
you.
So much. You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest has been Rory Crawford, a moving consultant with JK Moving and Storage. I'm Shirley Rooker, and we thank you for joining us.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.
Did you know federalnewsradio.com offers specialized news feeds just for your agency? Find the agency news page at federalnewsradio.com, search term agency news.